Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
To the show is comic book creator J.M. Brandt.
Hello, how's it going?
Glad to have you on here.
Glad to be on here.
Okay, and we got horror maestro podcaster, Journey with a Cinephile, David Garrett Jr. How are you?
I'm doing good. Glad to be back.
Anytime. And then we got the one, the only, Bunny Williams.
Yes.
Conquering faces.
One half of the Pope on Film podcast.
Yes. He'll preach it to you. Okay, so we are taking on the one, the only, Larry Cohen, and essentially how he's recreating his career every decade in numerous formats. So just circle around, just show us how any of us got into it and what resonates the most while we just kind of go throughout numerous segments of their career. So, JM, you're new to here, so you tell us how Cohen fitted into your life.
Put me on the spot right away, huh?
Yeah, the first timers always go first.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's like a Dr. Bird picture show. Get the virgin up front. You know, actually, I was a part of a horror movie message board a long time ago when message boards were like the reigning internet way of talking to people. And they were always talking up the stuff. So I was like, oh, I should probably check that out at some point. And then I just never did. And I started working at a video store and saw the cover for Black Caesar. And
nice.
I fell in love with the cover for Black Caesar and watched it. And it's become one of my all-time favorite movies.
Totally.
So that's where it started.
That's a good pick. And like you say, a lot of his stuff was like, it would show very obscurely, even still to this day, like antenna channels. Chances are people saw his stuff without realizing, because I mean, he started out writing he created The Invaders, wrote numerous episodes of The Defenders and The Fugitive, and Columbo. So it's like, you've seen a lot of his stuff. And then if you didn't see that, then you probably saw his episode of Masters of Horror. And if you didn't see that, then you've definitely saw some of the blaxploitation or Western films that he did, you know?
Totally. Well, I just remember seeing the trailer or the commercial for Original Gangstas all the time.
Yeah,
on TV.
It still to this day shows on TV quite a lot. Oh. Lose you there?
He looks like he froze.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I'm hearing myself echo, which I don't know why. I just updated this. Oh. Okay, well, Bunny, you are next up.
Larry Cohen made me convert to Judaism.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll leave the door open for Elijah, and that's because of Larry Cohen. I'm not as familiar with his later works. I have seen Phone Booth, but I appreciate his writing, but when I think of a filmmaker, I do think more of a director. You know?
No, so, I'm good.
So, he is so wonderfully fucked up, isn't he? Larry Cohen?
Totally.
And he's also one of these guys who, like, just doesn't realize or will allow anybody to know that he is actually as bad as he is. You know? Yeah. Like, Roger Corman is great with that. Like, he'll never admit that.
No, he's too proud. Too proud. Okay. And like you say, I mean, it is always just kind of one of those.
We back in?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. IMAX, fine. Maybe turn off the video.
I did. My internet sucks. Sorry.
No, all good. I'm telling Bunny. How about you turn off your. He's freezing. Fucking hell.
Yeah, I noticed that earlier too.
Okay, so I'm gonna let Garrett go ahead next.
Okay. For me, actually, my introduction to him was my dad collected he collected a lot of like horror VHSs, and for whatever reason, he had the stuff. And I know my sister and I watched it, and it was one of those ones that, like, terrified us, but for whatever reason, we would watch it, you know, periodically. And I also remember seeing, like, It's Alive be on TV, and especially, like, the sequels and everything. So that was kind of my introduction.
Wait, there was a sequel to The Stuff?
Oh, no, It's Alive, sorry.
I'll guess. But no. That's a good point, though. You're, like, the third person to tell me. I'm here. You know, your video kind of froze there. Oh, good. How about you just switch off the video for now and then see if that works better. Bunny, can you hear us? Okay, Bob. Let's see. Switch off the. Bunny, can you hear us? This happens every time. Switch off stream. Go to audio only. Okay. No, you're the third person, Garrett, to tell me that. That is like. Their folks or antenna channel programming just would play it, and it's like it is kind of wild. It's like that because it's gotten Blu-ray treatments and everything, and a lot of people are very familiar with that one. It's like wild because I can't recall the last time it's been shown on TV.
I can't either, and it's actually wild watching the documentary about Larry Cohen, just because like there's so many things that I didn't realize that he ended up writing, and, you know, kind of later in his career especially, that kind of threw me off. But then, you know, seeing that documentary where they're talking about how, like, that's what he was known for, you know, kind of early on.
Yeah, and even character actors who were big best buds with him, like...
Hello, right. I'm seeing people.
Yeah, I can see you. Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
I guess the answer is no.
Maybe we need to start singing it.
We can hear you. Turn off the stream.
So now you can hear me, but I can't hear you.
Okay. Oh boy, this will be fun to edit. I think can you hear us now, Bunny?
Okay. Okay, still not hearing you.
Still not hearing you.
Check the settings. It's weird. I checked the settings at the start of the call, and the start of the call was fine.
Okay. Anyway, nice to meet you in the chat, Tom. Yeah, you jumped on there, so I didn't know you were making the episode. So, what was your introduction to Cohen?
Oddly enough, it was a documentary about blaxploitation films, one called Badass Cinema.
There you go. Yes, that one played constantly on IFC.
Yeah, it is really good. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. It gave me a whole new appreciation for not just the genre as a whole, but for Cohen especially. Because what he was doing was brilliant. He had a bunch of gangster movies or had some ideas. And when this blaxploitation boom started happening, he said, I can do this. It basically started rewriting or reworking some of the old gangster movies from Jimmy Cagney and that, and just making it and putting it into New York City. And I heard that and it's like, it's simple and yet it's brilliant.
Yeah, and like Bunny mentioned earlier, is like Roger Corman can be too proud of himself, and is like Larry, you know, just like he kind of could get away with it because it's like he knew that regardless of who he worked with, the moment you add multiple other talents to it, it's going to take a totally different identity. So it's like you can just still say, hey, I came up with the idea, you know, or I was assistant director, or, you know, I reshot it, I came in late. And he was also pretty good at just compromising. This is like without just, you know, you never see him in any interview just even badmouthing any of his works. He's like, yeah, well, I'm one of the co-anchors of it, so it's as much my voice as it is all the other guys' voice.
Yeah, I definitely felt that way watching the Larry Cohen documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just he's a self aggrandizer, but a self-promoter at the same time, and just sort of is proud of all his babies for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you guys said, Ball kind of mentioned, some of his movies are deliberately trashy, and some of them are, you know, pretty well thought out, and it just kind of just depends on the vibe, and some of them, they start off good, and then they kind of become a whole different movie, for better or worse, by act three. And so then you just say, well, that's just the business. If anything, I guess you could say his movies are making everyone more aware. It's like that it's going to happen. It doesn't matter how talented you are or, you know, how late you came in. It's got to say. So... yeah, like the cell phone trilogy is as much his movies as they are whoever worked on them. William Lustig's Maniac Cop is as much Lustig picture as it is Cohen's script. So it's like, yeah. And
that's one thing I really didn't realize was how much he's written outside of not just directing.
It's funny you mentioned original gangsters earlier because, yeah, the Black Caesar movies that he does with Fred Williamson really are worth watching.
Oh, yeah, yes, totally, they are.
Totally. The sequel, not as much, but there were fun things in it.
Well, that's just it. I mean, pretty much the sequel was just leftover outtakes, you know, with while also just doing a rehash.
With a couple, like, the fights that just sort of try and outdo whatever they did in the original, right?
I think so. I mainly was too busy trying to see who was killing who. Bunny, now we got you back on here. What do you think is his trashiest movie, for better or worse?
Trashiest? Jeez.
How about The X, where he works with Commando Firestarter director Marco Lester?
I would have to go with the first It's Alive movie. I mean, killer babies. Just killer babies.
I would always get that.
Much else left to say there. I mean, Q comes pretty quick, pretty close. But, you know,
right.
They tried. And it looked, that animal looked good at the time, that monster.
Right.
Well, it's just making fun of all the Harry Hostin type stuff. Yeah. Oh, man. And it's funny you mentioned that one because, I would always, Q, I could never get a straight answer on anyone who liked or hated it. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to find out myself. And then, I would always mix up It's Alive with Eaten Alive.
Yeah.
Aside from just the Alive thing, they had coincidentally similar posters and, you know, cannibalism and abuse. And it's like, geez, not even the same kind of tone, even though they're both drive-in features. And we mentioned Original Gangsters earlier. But yeah, it's like he's done a bunch of other blaxploitation, like Redirect and everything. But it is kind of cool how he kind of departed from the Roger Corman camp. And, you know, other than even the stuff being, you know, distributed by New World Pictures, he kind of utilized actor Dick Miller almost as much as Joe Dante, another similar face.
Yeah.
And so I guess kind of sideswiping this, what do you think he's better known for other than, you know, the shows he's worked on, Maniac Cop, the Cell Phone Trilogy, and It's Alive and the Stuff? Is there just other particular movies that you think people are rediscovering or checking out?
You know, I've heard a lot of buzz on, like, film Twitter, Letterboxd Twitter, about the Salem's Lot movies. And
okay,
maybe not so much his sequel as much as the original, but I think because people are going back to the original, they're checking out the Larry Cohen by proxy.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes better sense.
Yeah, which I haven't seen. I only saw the original Salem's Lot even like 2 years ago.
Oh no, I've just jammed in a lot of Larry Cohen. I did all three Alive movies.
You're awesome.
Return to Salem's Lot, Q, God Told Me To, and
He Told Me To.
I can't think of, huh?
He Told Me To, and
yeah,
pretty rare mainstream role for Richard Lynch before he becomes direct-to-video maverick.
It seems like for Larry Cohen, the film that seems to get most talked about and get much press is The Stuff.
I guess because, I mean, now that we know that they're not lying, there is a lot of fucked up shit in all our food, even the so-called organic stuff. So it's like, I guess people look for distrustful stuff, stuff they've always heard about or saw, like you say, at mom and pop stores or thrift stores, these movies.
Right. Well, I also kind of feel like it's maybe his most competent movie, or at least out of all the ones that I've seen. It's like the one where his skill level, or the skill level of him and his crew, matched his ambition for the first
time. Right, as opposed to giving it to someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also think he's also in The Stuff, he is better at delivering a message. Larry Cohen generally likes to have a message in his movies, but previous to The Stuff, he was so friggin' heavy-handed with it. Mm-hmm. You know? It's Alive. It Lives Again was just like, it's about abortion! Like,
right. Now, that's a good point. And special effects is kind of like his blueprint for The Stuff, but it's not as fleshed out. So it's like, and then you get Uncle Sam, which is kind of a very bottom of the barrel lower version of Maniac Cop, and then you got The Ambulance, which could easily be in that same universe. So and then he's had other movies where he practically just redid it all. Like, he came in late and he was hired, you know, to do it all over again, like Wicked Stepmother. You know, that's technically not really even his kind of movie, but, you know, he was a merc at that point. So
it kind of feels like he had no shame cinematically, which I appreciate about him. It's like, oh yeah, no, a job, I'll do it. And
if I have to be called a whore, like the
TV writing stuff, you know?
Yeah. And speaking of TV, he does have a lot of sleeper like TV movies in some cases. Then he has some other infamous ones, which people will be like, oh yeah, I saw that one. It comes on. the in between channels once in a while. That's something else. You gotta see it. I guess you could say though, TV pretty much was his jumping, not only his jumping point, but like his practically his training.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I even have the complete series of Arrest and Trial, and you know the Rat Patrol reruns are on all day, and he did like guest spot episodes of those even, which got replayed a lot. So I think he pretty much knew how to get everyone's attention, and he was only as good as whatever amount of time was spent on it. Otherwise, he wasn't gonna, you know, spend any more on it. Women of San Quentin comes on a lot of the movie channels once in a while, and I think that's an interesting real life inspired story, and it could have easily backfired or been a very low rent movie, but he pretty much gave them enough to work with all the actors on it. Let's go to another one. So during the 90s, every movie was trying to be like, you know, Basic Instinct or The Temp and all these other, you know, Hand That Rocks the Cradle movies. What's you guys' take on Guilty as Sin? Is it a good Sidney Lumet movie, or is it a bad Sidney Lumet movie but a good Larry Cohen movie? Or is it just a mess? Because it's two voices in one movie, and you've never seen anything like it. It's like a lot of critics hate the script but like it because, you know, they like Sidney Lumet.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to predict on this one.
Yeah, I got to give it a pass, unfortunately.
Oh, good. No, it's cool to know, because it's like I've never really seen anything like it before.
And maybe there's a reason for that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But it Crazy. Does have Rebecca De Mornay, so
baby.
It's worth watching.
Yes.
I'm assuming.
I had fun with it, but it's another one. It's kind of like a lot of the other infamous sci-fi horror movies. Is like you don't really know if you want to bring it up if you're going to get a "oh, I love that movie" or a "oh, I fucking hate that movie." So I'm not tempted to bring it up because it seems like it just has a mixed
Aren't
bag
the best of things to bring up.
Maybe, unless you want to be shouted down and be like, "well, now I feel guilty for bringing this up. I kind of secretly like this. Now I'm going to be judged. God damn it."
No, bring it up. I judge no one. I like Batman and Robin.
It's better than The Dark Knight Rises.
It's a lot shorter,
a lot funnier.
More nipples.
Yeah. Give me that over shirtless Bane and his crazy voice. Yeah. Oh, and now all the Nolan guys are snapping me now. So
I mean, I'm not saying I wanted to see it, but having seen it, George Clooney has a pretty nice ass. You know, I mean, credit where credit's due here. It's not America's ass, but it's not bad.
Out of curiosity, who has America's ass?
I don't know.
Captain America.
All I know is that Captain America finding himself is totally evil Captain Kirk, you know, against the "I'm Captain Kirk."
but does Steve Rogers still have America's ass, or does that title pass along with the shield?
Gets it. Yeah, everyone thinks, Agents of Shield. Oh yeah, Marvel is like, when I think of a show called The Shield, I think of just that, the Crooked Cop show starring that, bald
Michael
dude.
Chiklis.
And I was very disappointed that Falcon the Winter Snowman didn't address the situation. I mean,
didn't show their ass.
Is Anthony Mackie's ass now America's ass?
Right, please. Don't shy away, or is that too woke for all these controversial people? I don't know why anyone gets offended by woke. I thought that was a good thing. Now everything has to be controversial. Apparently not. Yeah. What's wrong with sleeping? Fuck.
Well, woke is a very scary thing when you think the world is flat.
Maybe that's
what
tell us.
The world is flat. You just get things wrong. I'm sorry.
Okay to be wrong. We'll wake you up. God, where do I bring this back? What shows do you guys think you probably saw the most by him? Just given his large resume, I'm sure everyone saw the episode he wrote of NYPD Blue somewhere along the way. But then he, you know, he wrote The Fugitive and, you know, Defenders, and, you know, those shows are almost always on some black and white channel.
You know, I was really shocked.
I'm gonna have to bring up a list.
Yeah, I was really shocked by his TV resume, because I know about all these shows. Well, except for Griff. I don't know Griff. But I haven't actually seen any of them. And what I found even more astonishing is Branded. Like, everybody was talking about Branded in the documentary, and I was man, I need to see Branded, especially because of the whole Lebowski connection.
Yeah, I would have thought I would have seen it because it was a Chuck Connor show, but it was like, nope, I saw The Rifleman. That I didn't see that one.
Right, yeah.
Not even on H&I, which is doing a lot of older Western stuff, like, you know, Wagon Train.
It's pretty impressive, his background with TV and everything, and just that he was able to create so many different shows. But I would venture to say the biggest thing that he's ever done TV wise is probably Columbo, right?
Probably.
I
mean,
I don't think that I've seen any of those three episodes that he wrote, but or wrote the story for, I should say, but. Everybody's seen Columbo, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I remember most of the first season was by a little known guy called Stephen Bochco. So yeah, I guess that's around season 3 and 4, 73-74 era. So yeah, I definitely didn't see as many of those.
And I had to have seen the Masters of Horror episode.
Totally. But
I kind of only vaguely recall it when I reread over it.
Right. In a way, I guess you could say everyone wanted to hire him for something that they were loosely connected or a fan of. Like, it makes sense that he would have been involved with Maniac Cop because he had been, you know, around the same time he was doing this stuff and other Roger Corman type stuff. And then, you know, that makes sense why he works with Mark L. Lester, who also kind of came from the same factory, and he does some of those movies for HBO. And then, you know, Maniac Cop is kind of a Serpico movie if you take away the supernatural Evil Dead type of aspect from it. So yeah, that makes sense why he worked with LeMay somewhere.
I like that you're drawing parallels and connections.
It's
from Maniac
pretty much
to Sidney LeMay.
I know. It's just
making,
like,
black and white and put a fedora on him, and you got yourself Casablanca.
Two totally different movies with similar themes and different delivery. Yeah, it's like, in Captivity, I saw some people comparing that to Phone Booth, even though it was totally meant for the Saw crowd, and I didn't get much of a Saw aspect from it. I just got a silly kidnapping drama. So it was like, yeah, this is like, but he got hired for a different reason, yet he just had enough to where it could blend, depending on who, you know, tackle it or what producer recut it.
I still can't get over the fact that he did Phone Booth in the first place. Like,
just, yeah,
that's just such a bizarre movie. Like,
right,
even the concept, right? And it's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna show a guy stuck on the phone in New York for 2 hours.
It was a very interesting concept, and I'm always really kind of interested in, like, a one set movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sardine can.
Yeah. So, and
I just add all this extra stuff that adds extra details to it without overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The fact that even David Zucker, the king of parody movies, even co-produced it, that's kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, it was I don't know if you would call it, you know, the twin movies when similar films are competing, but yeah, that's the same room as Panic Room, another, you know, claustrophobic movie. And then he wanted to make it for Hitchcock back in the day, and, you know, just, you know,
yeah.
he didn't have the whole concept or reason or motive to keep the guy. And so then years later, he's like, how about it be a sniper? And I think there's just so many other elements, because this is when Joel Schumacher starts using a lot of David Fincher's same cinematographers. They're friends, by the way. That's a weird combo. And Kiefer Sutherland's kind of playing a Hannibal Lecter type villain. And it does kind of throw back to all those Dog Day Afternoon, Die Hard kind of hostage movies, too. So it was like it had something for everybody.
Yeah. Not necessarily something good for everybody, but something for everybody.
Not a fan.
Sorry. No.
All good.
my latter day Cohen is a little iffy at best.
It's okay. I'm kind of just a B movie apologist, but there are some where it's like I would just give the finger to Roger Corman saying, you know, I'm so glad I didn't pay for that. My God, you know, what a mess. It just, call it what it is. It's a knockoff of this movie, and you just beat it. You know, it just came out earlier, so that's why more people saw it. But come on, it's not good. It doesn't make any sense. The ending.
I guess you invested in it, it's the worst $2 you ever spent.
Probably one of the first ones even I saw was probably bestseller, and I didn't realize for the longest time he wrote that. Looks like we're breaking up here.
Oh, I don't know that one. You said bestseller?
Yeah, we're Brian Dennehy finds out there's this.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, basically being a vigilante going out and.
I paid money to watch Brian Dennehy vigilante.
Yeah, if I remember, it was like made for TV or made for like HBO or something, wasn't it?
It was a theatrical release, but yeah, MGM released it. Cohen, that's like the only vocal quote I could find him in where he hated how they changed the ending.
Yeah.
Personally, I never heard anyone badmouth the ending. It was kind of more just showing how they were getting involved and they were taking down a giant corporation.
Yeah.
It took a few watchings for me to get into. It's wild how he was inspired by Strangers on a Train, because I definitely got more of a, you know, maniac cop without the horror fantasy. It's like, because it is the same kind of thing. A killer goes around and someone else must stop him. And, you know, must he put him down like an old dog, or must he actually, you know, help him out? It's a strange dilemma.
Yeah. I'm just kind of surprised Maniac got made.
It so could not be made today. If they made it today, it would probably be overkill, like just deliberately trashy but still shitty, like, you know, Machete or something, where you're just like, what? Well,
Nicholas Winding Refn, or however you pronounce his name, get on some sort of like a I want to do a Maniac Cop show train for a while.
Yeah, Nick Reff was,
sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, he was saying he was going to try and make it be an HBO show. I think right now, more realistically, is David Gordon Green's Hellraiser anthology show. So,
I mean, I don't know. If you don't have the jaw, you just can't make the series.
It's true. Yeah.
John Hyams of the Universal Soldier movies was attached to do a remake, and I was like, please don't fucking do it. No. You're good with action, character development. That's not your thing.
I don't think it could be remade yet.
Yeah, I know everybody wants to do remakes and all that, but some things you just can't do, because there's just no replacing Robert Zadar. You know, you just couldn't do it. You know, just like Michael Berryman in any movie, you can't. He's not a replaceable person. You know, you don't get people like them.
Right.
It's them or nothing.
That or nothing. Yeah. Oh, man.
I want to wear a shirt now that says very men or nothing.
Jesus. However you like it. Yeah.
So I'm really happy that I found out about this podcast. When I saw the Larry Cohen thing, I was like, oh, good. I'm going to go ahead and watch one or two Larry Cohen movies I've never seen before. And then I stumbled on It's Alive, and I could have sworn I had seen it. And, you know, pot has killed basically my film knowledge for 90% of what I've seen. But it turns out that I hadn't seen it before.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, that movie is a trip. That movie is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty effective. And I guess...
Except it really gets kind of confused there. Well, again, killer babies. But, I mean, like, really, Larry, what's the message here? Having children will ruin your fucking life? I mean...
He's not wrong.
And then it was like... It was so convoluted with... I forget the actor's name who played it, who's always a stone character. Never particularly liked him.
Oh, that guy. I'm just kidding.
That guy, yeah. I mean, through the whole movie, it's like, that's not my child. I'm not the father. That's not my child. Get toward the end of the movie. Oh, it's my baby. I got to help him. And then a couple of minutes after that, yeah, go ahead, shoot him.
I think overall, you can say.
Well, if anything, how would you respond to having a monster baby?
It's a good question. I think he pretty much went in the mirrors, like, would I accept it, or would I be like all the other hypocrites who are like, oh, don't get an abortion, but oh, you know, leave it in a dumpster, you know? Right.
Yeah, it's I kind of like how he played it. Like, I think Larry Cohen really wanted to blow people's minds with that whole, like, it's real easy when you're the dad to like, dissociate yourself from anything that you find to be imperfect with a kid, right? It's like,
right. Oh,
that's not my genes. Like, no, that's the mom's fault. Or, you know, what was she eating while she was pregnant? And so for, like, it to flip around on him at a certain point, and also for people to be extra sensitive, but then he dissociates so much from it, I don't know. I kind of liked it. I thought it was a lot deeper than it had any right to be, because, as Bunny said, killer babies.
Yeah.
Totally. So, well, to lean in on that.
What makes it so hard to take such a heavy theme along with it.
Yeah.
And I can't, and at the same time, I would hate anyone else to do these kinds of movies, because they would have probably go into even bigger overdrive, overkill. So to speak. Yeah.
And especially with It Lives Again, I mean, it was like, okay, you know, yeah, it's wrong for the government to break down your door and kill your newborn baby. Yeah, but we aren't talking about mutant killer babies here, you know? So like... And that movie was great, because he took all sides and just went nuts, exaggerating the hell out of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that was all abortion. And the actor, the father of the first baby, now he's like, I don't know, some kind of saint or religious leader.
More or less, yeah. That's definitely what you could take away from it.
Yeah.
TV Guide said of his style in their review of Maniac Cop 2, a number of quirky characterizations, a Cohen specialty. I think that's basically it.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I definitely with a lot of his characters, they go in directions you don't expect them to. I thought that was something really interesting with the documentary, was interviewing Moriarty. And
yeah.
Well, I mean, just the fact that guy just seems like total whack job to begin with. But just that Larry Cohen gave him this, like, unfettered landing, like airway to just take off and do whatever he wanted to do. Like, I'm thinking about the stuff right now. Why on earth did Moriarty decide to play that character that way, as this, like, suave country bumpkin with some sort of, like, a vendetta against corporations and odd ties to the FBI? It was like...
Good question.
Yeah. He's got some really interesting characters. Like, maybe some of the more oddball character combos, I would say, outside of, like, the Coen brothers or something like that.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Most definitely.
For sure. All right.
I mean, in the stuff, he was a corporate saboteur. I don't think I've seen a want ad for something like that. Certainly, my guidance counselor never mentioned corporate saboteur as an option.
Well, that's because you would have to punch people in the face to get the envelopes of money to make that an actual job.
Yeah.
Plus, I hear the IA and medical aren't that great.
Yeah, that's true.
That brings up an interesting thing that I picked up from the documentary. The very fact that Coen has so many ideas and so many ways to look at something completely differently. These are the kind of... That, I think, that's what sets him apart from a Roger Corman. Roger Corman is a good director of bad movies with no message. Eric Coen is a good director, or was a good director, of bad movies with a message that you could kind of understand.
Right, yeah. And each time Corman wanted to do something, you know, it just always got meddled. It always became, well, we're losing money, or we can't afford this. So it's like, yeah, so there wasn't going to be any message. It's just going to be incomplete and with a random cliffhanger where someone, mad scientists or... Private Eye, who's already kind of a bad person, finds out something shocking and then, you know, gets left for dead, and it ends there, and it's like, what the hell? Coen at least wants to stand out in that.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think he ever set out to try to make a bad movie either. Like, I think he had the best intentions most of the time. It's just kind of what you're saying is that budget a lot of times kind of hamstrung him where he couldn't do some of the things he wanted to do.
Totally.
Yeah, I don't know if I can agree with that. I mean, I'm sorry.
I think this is a fan of many of his movies.
If you're making a killer baby movie, you know who you are.
I think he's self-aware, but he also...
Don't try to bullshit me.
Well, he wasn't trying to make killer babies the Citizen Kane of the 1970s, but like...
He still wanted to make a good horror movie, but he also,
exactly,
you know, that there's a reason that movie still has a mixed reputation. People like it as trash or as so bad it's good, and or as good movie with crazy shit in it. So I don't know.
Oh, I know. Don't get me wrong. I love these crappy movies. All of them.
At least it was made with heart and you remembered it, as opposed to, what the fuck did I just watch?
What's that? You know,
at least you remembered the heart and soul of them, as opposed to, I don't know what I just watched. I should put this on at a party.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
true.
Especially if I want people to lead.
with his scripts, they're much better written than those kinds of movies have a right to be.
Yeah. Well, totally. Because... A lot of these lowbrow movies kind of go for there's a reason they're called that. They go for like those lowest common denominator often, and you're like, I kind of feel guilty to be watching this, you know?
Right.
Well, yeah. I'm kind of taking it a bit from the other side, where I think like the message is kind of heavy for the kind of movie it is. And again, I enjoy these movies.
Yeah.
And I enjoy them having a message, you know, but.
So Tom, Bunny, David, and JM, where will he rank? So he's above Roger Corman, and obviously he's not Sidney Lumet. But where does he rank? Obviously, he's not Yul Ball, but he's also not Scorsese or Spielberg, and he never wanted to be. So, where would you rank? He's kind of below Sam Raimi, I guess. Mm-hmm. He's not Argento, so...
Well, I don't know. I gotta kind of factor in that Larry Cohen is still a Hollywood guy, you know, where, like, Roger Corman isn't, you know, and most of any of his peers or who should be his peers are not Hollywood guys.
Right.
You know, but
definitely
Larry Cohen is more of a Hollywood guy who would be hanging out with Sidney Lumet, you know, as opposed to hanging out with Lloyd Kaufman.
Right.
Right.
He's definitely, I think, above Lloyd Kaufman, who is kind of just a renegade. He's off the scale, especially when he's buying any kind of movies. So,
yeah. Is it wrong to think that the two of them would have gotten along amazingly?
I'm surprised he didn't start out working for Kaufman or do a movie that Kaufman distributed at some point. I couldn't
well,
mind.
Especially, yeah, with the guerrilla filmmaking that they both, you know, are known for.
Right, exactly. And both of them being East Coast guys for a while.
Well, and don't get me wrong, you don't want to talk smack about other people, and at the same time, like, some of the renegades just notoriously keep doing it wrong and get a different kind of fame, you know, infamy. And like you say, Corman was kind of a pioneer, and he kind of liked to just keep bragging, oh, so-and-so, they're famous now, but they used to work for me. Oh, I made them. And so... It's like, yeah, it's like Kaufman was kind of more just, I guess you could even make it, it is fair to make a contrast to him and Cohen, because he's also worked on a lot of big pictures, yeah. Whether it was just doing, you know, guest directing of the original Rocky or Toxic Avenger being a cartoon, so.
I kind of tend to rate my bad movies by how much heart and soul I believe they have. Mm-hmm. And I think Larry Cohen across the board has more heart and soul than Roger Corman. Yeah. Roger Corman was always looking for a buck, and in a lot of cases with his movie, it shows. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell Larry Cohen loves his work.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I see him very much as a craftsman, and I think the writing side of it ultimately helped his directing, because it's one thing to be able to put an idea down on the page. It's another thing to be able to get other people to see that vision that you have and recreate it as best as you can. Cohen did that, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I think I would rank him very high on my list of not just bad directors, but maybe just higher up on just directors in general.
B is for B movie. That's good enough for me.
Because believe me, I in just watching movies, I've seen great movies. I've seen movies that have been hyped up to no end. I'd have to say that I'd put him on par, if not a little bit higher than Christopher Nolan.
Perfect.
Or higher.
I'm going to make him the, well, where does William Lustig rank? That's the same crazy guy who did, you know,
Relentless. I was just thinking that
Vigilante. So I rank him wherever he ranks. I'm ranking him up there. On a B movie scale.
Yeah, on the B movie scale, I think Cohen is above Lustig. Definitely. Like, I kind of picture movie making as like a four corners sort of situation, you know, like the
right producer, like, director.
I'm stepping in all these different states at one time, and Larry Cohen, I think, kind of is that guy that steps one foot in the good director and one foot in the bad director state at the same time. It's like his stuff is too good, especially like as time got on and it got more towards the 80s or whatever. He got better at actually making a movie as opposed to like his idea of a movie. But it never quite got there. And then with the older stuff, the ideas are really good, but the filmmaking sucks.
And yeah.
Like I love Black Caesar, but make no mistake, it's not a well-made movie. It's just a good movie.
It does have a lot of bloopers and everything, and I guess I pretty much am just used to it because I see it in almost every other 70s movie, but yeah, exactly. I mean...
Exactly, and just, like, the places that it drags, and that movie has one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, but it sounds surprisingly, like, eerily silent as a movie, except when the music's playing.
I've seen that happen to it occasionally, and I've seen even people as good as dead remember it as either a bad TV movie or as a movie they like just because the actors involved, but that's not saying a lot about the script for it, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Bone is the same way, you know, it's a really good movie with really good performances, but it's not well made either. he grew as a filmmaker dramatically over time, but he kind of was always just a good idea man and always a pretty good writer, I think. So he belongs on his own scale, I think. Like I can't rate him
off the charts.
Way. Yeah.
Exactly.
He just lives in, you know, Larry Cohen land.
Yeah. And that is a good way of putting it. I mean
okay, well,
You really don't do the kind of movies Larry Cohen does thinking that you're going to have a hand on your hands. I mean, he knows, he's got to know that he's taken a big chance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's why we kind of give him more credit than maybe he even wants to admit he needs. So I guess I'll, John has just joined the chat that we're wrapping up. So how about he and David rank Cohen's era? And from best to worst, where does it all rank? His TV work, his blaxploitation work, his B action horror movies, or his cell phone trilogy? Where does it all rank?
I gotta think about that.
Best to worst. What do you think you're more entertained by?
Well, I have the cell phone trilogy. Phone Booth, probably my favorite of the three of them.
Okay. I want to go in a little more detail on that? Just like...
Well, that one, I guess as somebody who grew up with Hitchcock, I love how it's more of Hitchcock inspired than, you know, the other two, I would say. And plus, you also have a director, Joel Schumacher, that I thought brought to life in a very interesting way. Whereas other filmmakers would have made more cliche, he managed to keep it in one space. And I thought it also showed Larry Cohen's writing, although I'm not sure if it was kept in the final product, but I've always enjoyed that film, and I always will.
Okay, well said. So, Garrett, I'll let you weigh in.
For me, the top's always going to end up being kind of the horror stuff, just because that's kind of what I mostly kind of delve into. And, I mean, even some of the stuff that is kind of weird in it, like, you know, God Told Me To, I still love the idea of this, you know, cult thing and what it's doing. And, I mean, Q, it's kind of interesting to have this, you know, once thought to be extinct serpent, you know, flying in on New York City, and then just the filmmaking they did there. And kind of going back to the, you know, cell phone trilogy, I like Phone Booth. I went and saw it in the theater and thought it was, you know, interesting. Nice. And then, like, as I've kind of, you know, watched it more and more, it does kind of go down a bit, but it's still kind of interesting and everything. So, I mean, and even blaxploitation is some of the stuff that, like, I came to it late in the game, but that stuff's very entertaining.
Totally. All right, very well said. So I'm going to let you guys all plug your various programs. JM, I'll let you go first.
Okay, so I am the co-writer of an upcoming horror comic book called Swamp Dogs. This first mini-series is called Swamp Dogs House of Crows. It comes out from Black Caravan and Scout Comics October 13th, 2021. And as of right now, there are still a few Ashcan copies left, which is technically art. Yeah, I know. It's our official first appearance. It came out late July, and that can be had at your local comic shop or directly from scoutcomics.com or swampdogcomics.com.
I wish I was a swamp dog. Good man.
Yeah. You know, after reading the book, you might not want to be a swamp dog, but they're disgusting. They're vile creatures before they die. They're sadistic Confederates, like super sadistic Confederates. and then they learn voodoo and get themselves resurrected as voodoo powered unstoppable beasts a century and a half later, and they're even worse than
shit.
But it's gonna be a fun read, so I recommend everybody does it.
Absolutely. Keep sharing links to that. Garrett, what are you reviewing next on the podcast?
Actually, I have over on Journey with a Cinephile, I am working my way through the last of the movies from 1941. So I think I'll be shifting up to 1951 to start kind of working through that list over there. Mm. And I'm also kind of working my way through for my written reviews that I do on my blog for the podcast Under the Stairs. I'm working my way through his Summer Challenge series list. So that's kind of a... taking up a lot of my other spare time at the moment.
Perfect. And Williams, what's next?
Oh, okay.
Roger. Talking to the Swedish chef over there.
So, Bonnie Williams, one half of the Pope on Film podcast, where we are trudging through our summer at the bottom, where we're going through, we're making selections out of the IMDb's bottom 100 list. These movies suck.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast Cure All, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag.
What does that mean?
Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. Mm-hmm. And then we just watch it, and we talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
most of the time. Ah. Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm. Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, oh, you know what we like to do? We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you could think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, mother. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say.
Ah.
All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
Yeah. Don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At GOH Pod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How did
be a
you
rough
watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too.
So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot, holes are gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Zemanoff, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier, Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author, Wendy Heller, and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Hi, everybody. It's Mac Jackson. I wanted to invite you to a new site called the Forever Adventure Network. This website has everything. Pictures, videos, blogs. There's original music by Harmony Constant. Two podcasts. One is the MacGyver podcast, where we celebrate Richard Dean Anderson, his iconic roles, and how it's influenced our lives. There's episode discussions, interviews, and life conversations. The second podcast is the Never Gets Old podcast, where we celebrate all the best things that we love in life, from TV, movies, music, and comics. The site is also the home for the MacGyver SG-1 audio series, an ongoing adventure series that continues the adventures of MacGyver and SG-1. There are also multiple stores to choose from for all of your pop culture and adventure needs. Come on by and check us out today. And thanks for joining the adventure.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts, and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod, or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet, and in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up